The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Van Hitch. Van is a senior advisor with Deloitte's Federal Consulting Practice. Van assists federal clients and federal CIOs in identifying long-term technology strategies to drive fundamental transformation in business operations, achieving savings, efficiency, and performance. And Van, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me again.
Well, I'm looking forward to the conversation. And, Van, you were the CIO at the Department of Justice for 9 years, and I understand that's the longest serving cabinet level CIO ever. Is that correct?
That's what everybody tells me. Yep.
So, and from a CIO's perspective and your assistance with clients, I thought it'd be great if we talk about in particular the Federal Information Technology Acquisition Reform Act to kick off the show. It does a fair amount of, I would characterize it as reorganizing or providing additional authorities and responsibilities, I guess, for CIOs, potentially in some agencies versus other departments that may be already organized around a FITERA model. So let's talk about Federal Information Technology Acquisition Reform Act, and I'll call it FITERA for the rest of the show.
So will I.
Okay. So what does FITERA do, big picture?
Well, FITERA basically gives the CIO of a department more very specific responsibilities in the area of budgeting, hiring of IT people, particularly the CIOs of components within that department, playing a major role in the definition and the prosecution of large IT projects and in IT contracts. And FITERA has been a long time in the process of developing it on the Hill. There have been many, many years of discussions that led up to FITERA. So it's actually gratifying to see that it finally came to be, because it was always a bipartisan kind of thing.
Sure,
whenever
absolutely.
They called me in to talk, that was the first thing that they all said. This is not one side of the government or another. This is a good government kind of thing, and that's what it should be.
Right. So, and what is the problem or the challenge as as someone who was a CIO, someone they talked to, what are the multiple problems, issues, challenges that FITERA was in response to try to fix?
Well, from an outside perspective, and I think from a congressional perspective, the reasons that they were so interested in all the effort that led up to FITERA was because if you look at IT, first of all, it is a huge amount of the federal budget, over $80 billion a year.
Yep.
And, like it or not, we in the IT industry have to admit there have been failures in government IT, and they have happened and they get a lot of visibility and everybody anguishes over them when they happen, the latest of which was the healthcare.gov. And that was perhaps the biggest, and,
yes.
and certainly it was a wake-up call, but not to say that there weren't other ones. So there were those kind of things. And then I'm sure the problem that Congress had and the problem that I have as a citizen is how and who can you hold accountable for good government? Who can you hold accountable in this area for IT? Who can you hold accountable if there is a problem with a project, and how do you get it fixed? So those are the mega issues that led to to FITERA. FITERA is kind of like a follow-on, and I say follow-on even though the other one was a decade before.
Sure.
But Clinger Cohen, which was prior to my time, but a very enlightened piece of legislation that tried to do some of the same things that FITERA did in terms of, putting responsibility on people. It it just didn't quite go far enough in terms of the way it was implemented. So, as a practical matter, as the CIO of a large department, it was very difficult to get any visibility of all of the IT spend within your department. It was very difficult to cajole your way, force your way, or be invited, on the other hand, to all the meetings that were necessary associated with the budget of IT items. It was the same is true of large projects. I mean, so the issues associated with being a CIO in a large department were really you weren't quite positioned and didn't have quite the authorities that were specific enough the way they were implemented in all the departments so that you could really be the point person because right. You didn't see all the budgets. You weren't a part of all the budgets. You didn't know that some agency on the side here was investing in a new data center. You didn't get any word of this project going, kind of south until 6 months after it happened, or you didn't have any way of knowing. You were just getting happy news all the time, and then all of a sudden you hear something really bad.
Right.
Those kind of things are, what happens in a very large organization. And unless what I found is the biggest tool that I had was getting to know people and getting their confidence and gaining their respect. And that takes time. That's one of the reasons I stayed so long, frankly.
Right. So it's almost like networking, right?
Yeah, to be effective, you really had to earn their trust. You had to really kind of make sure that they understand that you understand and you understand them and you care about them. And if that happens, then they would grudgingly, in some
sort
cases,
pull you
gradually
into the process.
Pull you in. Yeah. But it just took too much time. So in order to be an effective CIO, you shouldn't have to be around for 3 or 4 or 5 years before you can become effective. And so what Fatera does is addresses the specific kind of responsibilities that you need so that you actually have in your title something that says, I have this role and I have an immediate presence on these kind of issues that relate to IT. And that's really important.
To me, it's almost like a reorganization in a certain sense, right? When you stop and think of what you've described, various agencies that I worked at, or one agency I worked at, there were multiple CIOs, mm-hmm. right? And had, and they had, field operations or operational units versus central office.
Right.
And trying to sort of coordinate across that. Or understanding what's the strategic vision of the agency and how is information technology going to, meet that, mission, strategic mission and where you want to go. You have so many different moving parts that getting that to everybody to work together can be the challenge. That's really what it's all about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the, department, major cabinet level department has many different components. At Justice, there were 40.
Yeah.
So there were 40 people who kind of from an IT standpoint were the lead in those different components. And they were ranged from very small to extremely large. And a lot of them were very large. And once again, there was no direct reporting relationship between those CIOs, as we call them. And I never minded calling them CIOs. I mean, I know that was one of the things that actually didn't make it into the bill, but
yes.
Went in the earlier predecessors. But that never bothered me. Calling them CIOs, as long as it was understood that I was the CIO of the department. But getting them to kind of work in coordination with the department on big issues was the key. And once again, what it boiled down to was, did you have the relationships? Did you have the respect and to get things done? And even then, there were, it was very difficult. When it comes down to it, people act in their own interest. And if they thought their interests were closer tied to a specific agency, every one of their decisions would head in that direction. And it was very difficult for them to put on the big hat, as I always called it, in kind of the more cross-government, cross-departmental role. But that was kind of like the environment.
So how did it work?
What Fatera does is actually puts the CIOs or the IT leads of the different components more in a direct line with the CIO of the department. Now, the implementation guidance is not out yet, so it's not clear exactly how that's going to happen, But it's clear from the law that it says that there has to be a direct relationship, and that the CIO of the department plays a role in the hiring and the evaluation of those people, which is a big deal.
That is a big deal. So how was the relationship, just I'm curious, so the FBI, right? That's part of the Department of Justice, and I assume they had a CIO versus you as the department-wide CIO. How did, that's a big, big entity with big IT needs.
It is. But each one of the big, cabinet-level agencies has an FBI-like organization that's, huge. And they have a lot of budget. They feel like they have a lot of sway and a lot of, a lot of equities. And it's true. But the way I always dealt with it was the same way I mentioned earlier. You just really got to work with that agency. You got to make sure you understand their equities. You got to make sure that they understand that you care about them. You're not just an departmental CIO. You really care about their mission also. What I want to do is to make... And what I think Viterra, helps create the environment is where the IT leads of the components can care mostly about the mission of the agency they're at, and the departmental CIO cares about the overall IT, the commodity IT, and the IT environment that's in. So they can spend more time at the field level, as you said, on the mission-specific things of their agency, as opposed to the administrative systems, the infrastructure, the commodity IT kind of things. And that's the way I, as the CIO, always wanted it. That's what I was striving for, even though I didn't have Viterra to back me up.
Sure.
That's what I was aiming for.
Sure. And, man, we do have to take our first break, but when we come back, we'll be talking more to Van Hitch. Van is a senior advisor with Deloitte's Federal Consulting Practice, and we'll continue our discussion with Viterra and pull out some of the some other aspects of the bill, like the data consolidation, endorsement that's in there. It's a little bit about software licensing and a couple other issues. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Van Hitch. Van is a senior advisor with Deloitte's Federal Consulting Practice, the longest serving cabinet level CIO in history, right, Van? When we took the break, we were talking about Viterra and what it means for the government, frankly, for CIOs and for management of IT. And I think you started when you first started the discussion, you mentioned accountability, and I wanted to circle back there and your thoughts on how important that is to this particular legislation and the government moving forward.
I think it's critical. It's pivotal. What we need is accountability. Now, accountability has it means that you're accountable for the results. You're accountable to your management. You're accountable to the citizens. That doesn't come easy. So this is not going to be an easy thing for CIOs. I think most CIOs would welcome it, because it's a very difficult position to be in when you're kind of half-baked. You're supposed to be responsible, but you really don't have all the tools.
Right. It's like you have the responsibility, but not the authority, you're the belly button they point at,
exactly.
But you don't have the tools in the toolbox to be able to measure up, right, from accountability perspective.
Exactly. So the flip side, but I consider it even that positive, is CIOs now need to be responsible. Not only are they responsible, they need to be responsible and accountable. And that puts the burden on them. And I think it's something that they should welcome, because it is what's going to lead to better decisions. It's going to lead to better, more effective IT in government, which is critical to the success of government because of the role IT plays today.
Right. And I think just to emphasize another point you made in the first segment, it's that sort of that balanced approach, or the idea that you're accountable, but you have to be flexible, because there might be multiple CIOs, and at the operational level they may need unique things, but as the department CIO, you're looking sort of across a platform and got to manage that.
It's
a nuance to it, it seems to me.
It's comparable to the corporate world now.
Right.
Where you have more direct responsibility. You have more direct responsibility for IT. And you have people working for you in the divisions. who are responsible for IT in those divisions. That doesn't mean you steamroll everything.
Absolutely.
In fact, right. that would be a the method for failure probably, whether it's in corporate world or whether it's in government. What you it doesn't mean that you don't need to still and get the relationships and you need to gain the respect and everything. You do. It's just that you have now the toolkit. You actually have the responsibilities to make things happen. When they're important, you can you're the deciding vote, and,
right, sure.
and you can make it happen. So, I think that's critical.
Yeah, as positive development. So let's talk about some of the other pieces of Fatera. And the first one I wanted to ask you about is there's a affirmation or support for data center consolidation. So I'm going to ask the consolidation 101 question: what is data center consolidation?
Well. Actually, it's been going on for quite a while.
Yeah.
Over the years, as data center accumulation happened over a period of many, many years, I'm sure. But what happened was, and these are the days actually prior to my time, but there was, when there was more, budgets flowing more, a little less tightly than they are today, let's say, there was not as much concern about the idea was give people the tools they said they needed and don't ask questions. I mean, let's just get things done. So, which is fine to a point if you have a plan and if you kind of have an architecture that all fits within, but that wasn't the case. So, what happened was the accumulation of data centers from huge data centers that would rival any Fortune 500 company down to closets. Where people in a business unit or a small unit, operating unit, would have their servers that they use to run their systems and so forth. So over time, and I know the data center consolidation initiative happened when I was the CIO of Justice. I mean, it first started,
sure.
So I would say five, six years ago. When they first came out with the guidance, OMB came out with the guidance, they got numbers across the board because nobody knew what a data center was. I mean, so first you have to define what it is, and it's got to be something having to do with size and things like that, because some agencies reported they had 20 data centers, big agencies, and some said they had 200 data centers. And part of it was that really is the case, and part of it was, well, they're using different definitions for what a data center is. So at any rate, data center consolidation is the desire and the initiative to start eliminating those data centers down to a more efficient mix and more efficient infrastructure for the government and for departments. This has been something that's been done in the corporate world for over a decade, and they've been very successful in cutting out a lot of dollars and making things more efficient. It just didn't happen in the federal government. And so, starting 5 or 6 years ago, there was the push to do data center consolidation. And I'll say it was a slow roll, slow move towards that goal, but no major steps. And one of the things that I think the reason it appeared in Fatera was because, once again, it was very difficult to identify what the end state was going to be. It was difficult to identify how you're going to get there. And it was difficult to identify what, if any, savings there were associated with this. If we're
sure.
trying to do things to make things more efficient, we might be doing it for environmental concerns. We might be doing it for a lot of different reasons. And there were a lot of really good reasons to do it, but it wasn't clear what the benefits were and whether we were accruing those benefits or not, because nobody was really measuring them. So I think appearance in the Fatera legislation is really a statement on the Hill that, number one, they endorse strongly the idea of data center consolidation as a good government kind of thing to do. And number two, they want to understand what the benefits are, and they want to make sure that those benefits are actually achieved over time. So I think that's the crux of what it is. And I think I'm reading into it, obviously,
sure,
but
sure.
I'm reading into what I would believe would be the reasons why they would want to put it in here. Because it's actually been something that has been in play for a while. It's an initiative started out of OMB, and it was, I think, a well-founded, you know, good government kind of initiative. It's just, how do you get there to a better state? What is that better state, and how do we get there? And did we really do anything in doing that? Did we do what we were originally trying to do?
It's interesting listening to you describe the problem and what it is, because I stop and think about it. Well, okay, data consolidation for a specific agency or department, and what does that mean for its various, you know, operations or bureaus or whatever? Do they all decide we're going to have a shared services model and have one, you know, or go from 10 different centers to 5 or whatever? And then government-wide, is there a model where departments and agencies can do a shared services approach utilizing, you know, something like GSA setting up a contract, mm-hmm. kind of sort of thing? What was the sort of the strategy, or what were you trying to do at Justice while you were there?
During my term in Justice, our real emphasis in data center consolidation was to get our arm around the problem and just to reduce the number. Define what the problem is and how big it really is, and then gradually reduce that, and to get people to make moves over time that were going to get us where we needed to be. And, you know, as I said, the numbers were all over the place, agency by agency. We at Justice started off with something like 120
wow.
or 130 different data centers. And we gradually got down to 90, 80, 60, 50. But then it gets hard, when you close the closets and it really gets tough.
Right. And people say, not me, right? Kind of
that's
thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
It really gets tough after a point of period of time, because people become invested in it. They feel comfortable with it. They feel like it's, you know, partly their ownership, and if they, the stronger they are, you know, in their desire to accomplish their mission, the more they feel, okay, I don't want to take any of the things out of my sight that might affect that.
Sure.
And it's the job of the CIO to convince them today that that's not the case.
Right.
That is not the case. The CIO has to make sure that they understand that they are an important customer and will be treated as such in a federal environment. And that's a culture change also. So I think there's a lot of culture change going on that's
sure.
going to be necessary as part of this data center consolidation. One is on the part of the users, recognizing it really doesn't do me any good to have it in my closet. And number two, from the provider side, recognizing these are my customers and they are very important to me and I have to treat them like a customer.
Right. And Van, we have to take our next break. When we come back, we'll be talking more to Van Hitch. Van is a senior advisor with Deloitte's federal consulting practice. And when we come back, I got one more question on data consolidation. Then we can move on to some software licensing provisions that were in Fatera and start talking a little cybersecurity. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Van Hitch. Van is a senior advisor with Deloitte's federal consulting practice, and we're talking Fatera today, the Federal Information Technology Acquisition Reform Act. And when we took the break, Van, we were talking about data center consolidation and what is it and what does it mean and all that sort of stuff. And when you were describing the challenge, the problem, even the issues of just defining what a data center is, it strikes me that, you know, the accountability and sort of consolidation of authority within the CIO can lend itself to more effective data consolidation efforts. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Data center consolidation, as I mentioned before, is not something that happens easily or naturally in a large department like the Department of Justice or Homeland Security or others who have, you know, many data centers set up in separate units. It's something that is initially countercultural. There's a lot of reasons, you know, why people like to have their own data centers and so forth. So to go against that trend and to demonstrate the benefits of what consolidation is and to reap those benefits for the federal government, which I think is critical, it's going to take a strong CIO. So Fatera is very important in making data center consolidation a possibility in the federal government to make it real.
Sure. It seems to me another related sort of aspect of the overall management, the CIO authority, and even, defining what a data center is, the reviews and reporting relating to, department or agency IT portfolios. Can you talk a little bit about what, Fatera does in that space what it means?
Yeah, a very, very important element in Fatera. And once again, in this area, Fatera is endorsing kind of what has been happening over the past several years, but really putting more teeth into it. And it's the area of portfolio management. Several years ago, I'm going to say on the order of three, Portfolio Stat came into being, and it's been kind of like an incremental process, and OMB has tried to improve on it each year and so forth, and I think they deserve kudos for the coming up with it. It is a good government thing. It's something you kind of wonder why it hasn't existed before, but that's beside the point.
Sure, yeah.
But Portfolio Stat, what it was...
You could say that about a lot of things, right, when you're talking government, right?
Right. Portfolio, what it really was get all your IT initiatives together and let's put them all together and agree that these are the IT initiatives of the department, and let's prioritize all our IT initiatives. So, and some of them will fall out of it because we just don't have enough budget to do, and those are going to be hard decisions. Some of them will say we need to scale back here, we need to phase here, we need to do all these things. Some of them might say we need to integrate these systems, these are duplicate, we need to do this. Those would all be some of the good things that would happen when you have a portfolio. But the portfolio stat process was really to get all those things together and to get the key executives at the department level behind that portfolio. So get the CIO, the CFO, and the chief operating officer, and everybody else, the acquisition people, and everybody saying, yeah, these are the things that we're pursuing. This is kind of the department's portfolio. And then getting the same thing on the OMB side. The OMB people, the examiners, all the people from both the management and the financial side together, and this is what we're doing in this department, and we're all, singing from the same songbook, so to speak. That's really an important thing to do, and I think there have been good strides, but still a lot of improvement to do in terms of accomplishing that goal with the portfolio stat process. And the reason I say that there's more to do is just because getting your arms around all of that IT when before it was kind of fragmented and, kind of out in some cases, so to speak, out in the left field, was difficult to do. It's difficult to accomplish. It's difficult to get all those people knowledgeable in all the right things and so forth and get those groups together. But what does...
It's like a necessary piece of the puzzle. You need the information to be able to make good management decisions, right?
Absolutely. But what Fatera does is institutionalize that process. And that's a good thing. And it puts kind of like a microscope on it. It kind of says, okay, here is the process. We like the process. We want to make it more accountable. We want not only everybody to buy into it. We want everybody to say, yeah, these are the priorities. These are the right things that we should be doing at the department level. This is what we expect them to cost. So we are going to plan on budgeting for these things. So it gets everybody on the same hymnal. And so it's a good thing. But in Fatera, then you have to be accountable not only to OMB, but we're going to have Congress involved. We're going to have the GAO involved, kind of doing some oversight to make sure that these processes are transparent, to make sure that they're real. It's not just a kind of a paper exercise. It really, because once again, Fatera is a good thing, and I've strongly endorsed it always, but it could be a paper exercise if you're not careful. I mean, you could just go through the process and kind of shuffle together the old papers that were available 5 years ago and say, okay, here we go.
Right.
And everybody could kind of do the check mark, and it could be, this is the department's portfolio. What it really should be is it should be based on a thorough process of looking at what all the possibilities are and choosing these as the initiatives that we want to pursue. And it should be based on a kind of an IT strategic plan that represents the forward-looking
direction of the
whole department. Right. That's what it should be. I don't think that we're quite there yet. I think we're taking steps in that direction, and I think Fatira will help us get us there.
Okay, great. Now let's turn real quickly. Yeah, there's provision there. I just was interested in your thoughts providing GSA sort of leading the effort in software licensing, and particularly the idea of a government potential negotiation or establishment of government-wide licenses for software. Interesting provision. Don't know if it's executable or not, but I'm just interested in your thoughts.
Yeah. I think it's a good goal. I think they're always really hard to do. I mean, I've lived through a couple of those in the telecom area that GSA did, and I think they were really good efforts, but the negative side is they took so long to develop that by the time that they'd all kind of gotten into the actual procurement, your requirements had changed. Technology changes fast enough. You can't take 2 to 3 years to develop something and expect it to be on target. So I think there's flaws to it, but I think it's a good thing overall. One of the things that they have to do, the other thing about a government-wide contract is the difficulty of getting, standardizing on something or quasi-standardizing, right. At least providing enough of the potential areas that government would want to do to put that in the contract, and standardizing to some extent on certain provisions is a very difficult thing to do when you're looking across all government. So there's a lot of things that are very difficult about doing it. Obviously, it could have very good benefits if you accomplish it. The experience that I had that I mentioned to you earlier with you.
Well, hold that experience, okay? Because we're right up on the break already.
Okay.
When we come back, we'll be talking to Van Hitch. He is a senior advisor with Deloitte's Federal Consulting Practice. And when we come back, we'll continue that discussion of software licensing, and we'll turn to cybersecurity. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Van Hitch. Van is a senior advisor with Deloitte's Federal Consulting Practice, and we've been talking about Fatera, IT acquisition reform, and the various provisions, what they mean for CIOs, what they mean for government. And Van, when we took the break, I had to so rudely interrupt you, but we have to do business and commercials. We were talking about government-wide license provision of Fatera and what it could be, what the challenges associated with it, and
right.
I interrupt you. You were about to finish your thought, so I'll let you go back to it.
Well, I think I was given an example of a government-wide contract developed by GSA, and which in general was very, very good. So I'm very, very positive on it, but I'm going to point out a negative aspect of it too, and just based on my experience. And that was when we were looking at our overall broad area network requirements for the department, and this was early in my year as a CIO, we decided we really didn't have a good vehicle and a real network that the whole department was using. So we kind of embarked on that area as a big area of improvement that we could make, and actually we could get real savings from it, and we
did. Sure.
Mm-hmm. So we looked at using, it was called FTS 2000, I believe, and it was, and we ultimately wound up using that. Now what we found was we had to, because of what we wanted to do, we were kind of breaking new ground. There weren't any line items in the FTS 2000 skeleton contract that really allowed us to buy managed services the way we wanted to, because what we were trying to do at the department level was say, we don't want to be in the engineering business for telecom engineering. We want to be users, and we want to tell them what we're trying to do, and then we want them to be able to, the contractor to be able to provide that to us with strong service level agreements. So
sure.
That's what we were trying to do. It was very difficult to shoehorn that in under STS 2000, and we did. But we were able to because it was a flexibility in there. We just decided we could add some clauses and stuff like that. So we were able to use the T's and C's and a lot of the scoping of the contract, which was very, very helpful and saved a lot of time and everything. But we had to add our own, what we really wanted, because it wasn't available. And then what happened when they went to networks, they incorporated all those things. So it was great. So that's an example of how, you know, if you have a government-wide contract, it's not going to be perfect. But you got to make it a little bit flexible to allow that kind of thing to happen. And then you got to allow it to grow into what's really needed. Because one of the points I mentioned earlier is it can take so long to develop that it becomes, it's no longer quite what you need when you need it. So it's just part of reinforcing, I think I brought this up as a part of the point of reinforcing. It's difficult to do, but it can be done. But another approach also is taking advantage of department contracts, department-wide contracts, and saying, okay, here's the best we can, here's three departments that have really, really good contracts in this area. Why don't everybody jump on them and look at them to see which one suits you best and jump on that? And that can be very effective. So I think this can be implemented in some very smart ways that would help fairly quickly the problem that we have of too many contracts and consolidating some of them where appropriate and looking at things from a different way. So I think it is possible to do, but just kind of blanket government-wide contracts is not necessarily the way to get there from the start.
That balance, it's always that balance, right, between, you know, a standard set of terms where one size fits all versus that tailoring that's usually necessary at the departmental level, the operational level. And getting that mix right, sounds like. So let's turn to cyber a little bit. And, you know, I think a couple weeks ago, there actually was a cybersecurity summit where the president attended. There were CEOs from across industry talking about private sector, public sector cooperation to address cybersecurity. And, you know, I'm just going to open it up and just, you know, your thoughts on cybersecurity from your experience in government. What worked, what didn't work, what are the challenges? Just go ahead, go for it.
Well, cybersecurity, you'll find, no matter how many CIOs you talk to, it's going to be on everybody's list. I mean, it is a major, major area of concern, and it was. I mean, this is something that hasn't changed during the past 3 years that I've been out of government. It's still a major area of concern, and it should be. And that's because the threat is evolving. And no matter how good you are, you're not quite good enough to take care of the latest threat. Now, what has happened in cyber is the idea, as government agencies have gradually gotten a little bit more mature and have gotten the basic blocking and tackling down, is to try to prevent the bad things from happening as opposed to just letting them happen and react to them. And that's what should be happening. And that's kind of like the direction that cybersecurity is going and needs to go. So
is that like continuous diagnostic mitigation?
Continuous diagnostics, yep. Insider threat. You just don't wait till, you know, a Bradley Manning happens. You have tools that help you find suspicious activity in a way that will gradually allow you to narrow it down and to hopefully find something like that before it actually happens. So insider threat is a big one that I think most government agencies would probably be interested in pursuing more rigorously because, as I said, once you've gotten the basics down, you have to start. These are kind of things that you have to do in order to get a lot better. So preventing bad things from happening, intrusion detection and prevention of the intrusion to begin with, instead of just reacting to it. And incident response and is now kind of evolving into something called cyber resilience, because as opposed to just responding to incidents, it's the whole thing of recovery and prevention. So the whole idea is to become a more of a, an athlete in all of cybersecurity. And you don't just want to know what to do when bad things happen. You want to know how to prevent those things from happening and what are the clues you should look for and what is the kind of practices you need to have in place in order to prevent the bad things from happening as much as possible before. And that's all necessary because of the diversity and the the capabilities of the threat vectors, basically. I mean, from nation states that are very persistent and very, very, very capable to the hackers and the hacktivists and all of those. And it's become a big criminal business also.
Yeah.
So it's very diverse.
Yeah. So a question, and it sort of strikes me listening to you, and one of the things, there's a theme through the show where we've talked about the importance of a strategic approach and looking at it across cutting and all, but having flexibility for tailoring to unique requirements at the operational level or the bureau level or whatever. That's a CIO sort of job. We talked about licensing where one size doesn't fit all and you have to tailor. One of the things that I think is a challenge out there, and I'm interested in your thoughts, is we're starting to see different services even in the department of DOD and having different requirements in their contracts, and companies are saying, well, I have to spend X amount of money to meet this requirement. Then I see a completely different or an altered requirement over here at Navy, and I have to spend money to meet that one. Should there be more of a, what are they doing to try to look at it more of an overarching thing? I know you've got to do some unique things depending on the level of security needed,
right.
But is that an area that you're concerned about?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's basically the problem that every departmental CIO faces, is each one of those components, when they're beginning to look at a problem, often view it through just their own eyes and their own prism, and they don't view it as part of a larger problem for the department, which it is, and part of a larger problem for the government, which it is. In the area of cybersecurity, it is, of all things, a government-wide problem. And it is very
Absolutely.
Much an interdepartmental collaboration and collaboration with industry that is necessary in order to be successful in it. So looking at it through the eyes of a small business unit or an operating unit is absolutely not the way to do it in the smart way. You need to take advantage of your department, because the department can be the focal point of major things that are happening within your department, and communicating cross government and cross industry that will enable you to solve your problem. So one of the challenges of the CIO, and once again, it takes a strong CIO to do it, is bringing together the department around the area of cybersecurity. And you do it, once again, it's not an easy thing to do, but you do it with governance, you do it with self-interest, there's definitely a fear factor
with
cybersecurity that's there that often isn't there with others, because in fact, nobody wants to be on the front page of the New York Times and say that their agency has been attacked. It's bad business, it's bad reputation, and it's bad for everybody. So I think there's an incentive there to build on that dynamic. And the CIO plays a critical role in most agencies. Most CIOs have a CTO that reports to them. They will play a critical role in helping to coordinate all the components within that department into a plan that makes sense for the department. And once again, nothing's easy in terms of hammering out, quasi-standardized clauses and quasi-standardized requirements for all the components in the department. But that's what you really need to do.
Yeah.
Because what I found, there's big savings and big benefits out of having some standardized contracts in the area of cybersecurity and doing it all in one way. Your tools talk together.
Right,
You can have a security operations center that can look at all of the components on their behalf with outreaches to each one of them that are integrated. It just makes all the sense in the world, and it's extremely important. And as I said, particularly in the area of cybersecurity, because the challenge is so big, and the consequences of non-action are huge.
Right. Fascinating stuff, man. It's great. Another great show. I'll have you back again. We'll keep this discussion going, as we'll see how Fatera plays out. Back in a year, see how it's implemented.
I'm watching.
It'll be fun. So, and I want to thank my guest, Van Hitch. Van is a senior advisor at Deloitte's Federal Consulting Practice, focusing on information technology. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.